This is the Skirted Roundtable. I'm Linda Merrill from Surroundings.
And this is Megan Arquette from Beach Bungalow 8.
Joni Webb with Code to Texas.
And this week on the Skirted Roundtable, we are welcoming Vicki Archer, who is an author of the books French Essence and My French Life. And Vicki, thank you so much for joining us at the Skirted Roundtable.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm delighted to be talking to you all.
Well, we're excited to have you, and you are in England right now, correct? Enjoying the snowstorms?
No, actually, I'm in France.
Oh, you're back in France. Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So I was stuck in, I was in London last week because of there was a lot of snow and airplanes were cancelled, etc. So, but I finally made it back home, and so very happy to be here.
So you live in, you go back and forth between London and France.
Yes, I do.
And where in France are you?
I am near Avignon. I guess that's the town that I live in is called Saint-Rémy-de-Provence, and it's about 30 minutes from Avignon, or I guess we're 50 minutes from Marseille, if that's sort of easier to locate where I am.
Yeah. Wait, pronounce the town you're in again?
It's Saint-Rémy-de-Provence.
Okay. Yeah. I've just never heard it said. I've read it, but...
Well, I've got a kind of strange accent these days with a bit of, you know, my Australian accent. And then when you live away, I think your accent alters. And then, you know, I try and fumble around with the French. So it's probably why it sounds a bit strange.
We want to hear all about your background and how it is you came to move from Australia to France or, you know, how that progression happened. So tell us all.
Well, it wasn't I like to think of it as serendipity, or it was a sort of falling in love moment. It wasn't a planned thing. We had, my husband and I and our children had come on a holiday to France, and we rented a house in a nearby area. And we were just kind of enjoying ourselves, having holiday, relaxing, and we started thinking that one day perhaps we would like to have a little place in France, because he loved France, and I sort of thought, well, that sounds great if ever that day would come. But anyway, so we're here on holiday, and we looked at we went and looked at in a real estate agent's window, and as I was looking in the window, this girl came out of the door and said hello in perfect English, and I got chatting to her. She was a gorgeous girl, and we sort of struck up a conversation. And I said, oh, you know, we're just here on holiday, but it's interesting. Can we have a look around and, you know, what could we see possibly just out of, you know, interest, curiosity? Anyway, so she took us, she made this appointment, and she showed us the farm where we live now. And to cut a long story short, I don't know what happened, but we drove in the driveway, and that was it. I just fell in love in that moment. And I can't explain. It was like all the stars aligned, the planets changed. I don't know. It's totally ridiculous. But I had this overwhelming urge that this should be our home. And so somehow or other, I'm not sure how, but we made it happen.
You're not sure how. And so you moved lock, stock, and barrel?
Well, the problem was that it was a romantic thought at the time, and we did, you know, we went through with it. But in fact, what we bought was an abandoned fruit farm with no place to live, a pile of old stones, if you like. And so the romance quickly kind of turned into practical considerations, and we realized that we bought this sort of pile and that we needed to figure out how to fix it up so that we could actually make our home here. So that took a good 3 years, really, from the beginning to when we moved, we actually slept here. So it
What's
was a huge
history?
Project.
What's the history of the property?
I think some parts of the house, the original house is probably about 400 years old, and that was just a couple of rooms, stone facade, very, very simple. Then over the generations, buildings were added on. So what we did was we converted the living and the barn area into our home, so that we made one building out of kind of a combination of small buildings.
So have you found any artifacts on the property?
Not really. The only interesting thing which we found was a sort of, I wouldn't say it's a headstone, but there's a piece of stone laying in amongst the fruit trees, which has a date of 1800 and something. And we tried to kind of dig it out as much as we could and see, but it's very worn away. But it said something, that our house is called Mas de Berard, and it had that written on and a date of 1800 and something. So that was kind of fun finding that. And the other important thing about this region, I guess, is that it's a Roman region. So often you will find lots of pieces. There's a lot of stone that I'm sure dates back from Roman times. So it's a very interesting historical area here.
Oh, I'd want to have someone come out and do a dig. I'd be so fascinated by that.
Well, you know, I've always wanted one of those metal detectors in case I feel like I'm going to be lucky and I'll find a coin. But we haven't done that because when we bought the property, it was really run down, and over the years, a lot of things had been buried into the ground, rubbish and, you know, stuff like that. So until all of that keeps coming out, I think it would be a waste of time. But we're coming up. We love to do that, and also finding the time to do it. But it would be a fun thing to do.
Yeah.
So were you already writing and doing interiors when you moved there, or is the move to France sort of sparked?
Well, I guess it's funny that the finding the house or the property, then it's just led to a total life and career change. We were living in Australia until we found this property, and then as we realized that the property was going to take up more of our time and become more, I suppose, emotionally significant, we decided to move to Europe, and at the time it fitted in with my husband's work commitments. So when we moved, that was in 2000, and then after that and at the same time, simultaneously, my friend Carla Coulson moved from Australia to Italy, and she's the photographer that I worked with on both of the books. Anyway, we were friends back in Australia, and in 2004, Florence, where she was living, and I knew that we must meet up and catch up because we've been great mates back in Sydney. Anyway, so like all girls, when we met in Florence, I think we talked for 5 days straight. You know, I don't think either of us stopped. We just chatted, and we had so much to catch up on. And during that time, she told me what she'd been doing in her life, how she'd fallen in love with Italy and changed profession and become a photographer. And I said, well, you know, it's funny, I've fallen in love with France, and this house has become everything, and it's totally changed me and what I'm doing. And so she kind of took it away, and, you know, we just had a fantastic time. Then at that time also, she was doing a project for Penguin in Australia about which is now called Italian Joy, her first book. And so she wrote to her publisher and said, I've met up with my great friend Vicky. She is doing some really great things in France. I think we could do a book together. It would be a great story. So, in fact, that is how My French Life came about, and the rest is history.
Vicky, what did you do before, as far as work-wise?
Originally, after I graduated from university, I worked in fashion for quite a long time in Sydney. So that was my great love, actually. And I did that for 10 or more years, I guess. And then after that, I started a business with another friend, which was reproducing decorative arts of the 18th century in plaster, and we had a pretty good little business going with that. So that's the sort of my background from that point of view. So writing was a very new and unexpected pastime for me, and I guess when we finally got the go-ahead to write that I could write my French Life, I sort of stopped and thought, oh my, you know, did you ever think whether you could do this or not? But I suppose I just don't think like that. I just thought, well, you know, yeah, I want to, so I will. And that's how it sort of happened.
Well, I find that that's actually so amazing, because everything you hear about the publishing world is you kind of, you know, you already have to be a success to get a book deal. You know, you have to already prove that you can do it, or you have to have a treatise, or, you know, and it's just, you got into a great book deal.
It is incredibly hard. I just was so very fortunate. My publisher is a wonderful woman, and she has a lot of trust and confidence. But I think I just somehow or other it fell in my lap, and I'm very grateful for that, because I found something that I really love and I am in sort of enjoying every day of my life. So I'm quite grateful from that point of view that it did happen. But how it happened was extraordinary and not something that I ever expected. I mean, I remember reading the email when she said, yes, we would like to publish My French Life and we think it's a great idea and, you know, get started. And I just remember thinking, this can't be true. Like, this is madness. This is not me. What will I do? But, you know, it's just been the best thing for me.
Well, the whole story is just so amazing. You know, you just go on a vacation and, I mean, how many people dream of that? I think everyone goes on vacation, and I laugh because no matter where we are, Ben always turns to me and says, I could live here, you know. And, I mean, it could be just the most horrible place. But, you know, you did it.
You did
and
it,
that's
right.
So amazing.
I think so. When I think back on it now, I just think, you know, I mean, truthfully, I think we were absolutely crazy. It was a mad thing to do. But I don't know. I mean, the children were still young enough, I guess, so that wasn't a big problem.
Well, that's what I was wondering. How old were your children?
I'm trying to think. They were, I think Emily, the eldest, she was 13 or 14, and then they went down from there. So
that's a kind of an age that's kind of precarious. I mean, that's sort of, you know, socially, a lot of 14-year-olds aren't going to want to move to an off.
I guess, yeah, no, I mean, it was tough for them, but I've always felt that as long as we're together, always okay, and I felt that it was a great challenge for them, but a challenge for them. And I think in hindsight, they would tell you that it's been a great thing.
I can imagine that many teenage girls would turn down a chance to live in France. You know, I mean,
I don't know. I mean, I think it depends. You know, I guess it just depends on the kid. Did you enroll them in a school there, or did you homeschool them for a while?
We actually, that's why there's the London connection. We actually decided that from a practical point of view, one, the house wasn't habitable, but secondly, my husband's work was sort of Europe-centred and the England-centred at the time, and because of the similarities with the Australian education, we thought it would be easier for them for us to go to London, and then over time we would be able to incorporate more into the life in France. And that's effectively what we did. So they went from school in Sydney to school in England. And
did they speak French?
They didn't at the time, but all of them do now. They're all pretty good, actually. Pretty good speakers.
You've given them such an amazing life. Really.
Well, I mean, I like to think so. But the wonderful thing is that they are still very much Australian. And when they're in Sydney or, you know, in Australia, they're really part of the life there. And they've, these days with internet, they've kept their friends, you know, with Facebook and whatever else they do. They've got an immediate network when they get there. I mean, when we go on family holiday, I mean, we arrive and I'm at home and they're all out, you know, within 10 minutes. So they haven't lost that connection either, which I feel very happy about.
That really, really makes a difference. My family moved a lot when I was younger, and we moved just a few states when I was 13, from New Jersey to Massachusetts, and that was it. It was, you know, the end of the war, you know, the end of all the friendships.
Yes. Well, I think, you know, these days it's so, I mean, look at us now, the four of us, you know, we're chatting, we kind of know each other through the internet, but I feel like I know you girls. And here I am sitting, you know, in dark, dark, deepest countryside, and you're where you are. I mean, it's quite sensational, actually.
It really is. It really is. I think we all probably, I can speak for my friends here to say, we all wish we were sitting where you're sitting right now.
Oh, yeah. I'd love to be here too, but I'd like to be where you are as well. But that's the problem with France. You know, I think that Australians and Americans particularly adore France. For some reason, we have a kind of crazy infatuation with it. But so I sometimes think, but you know what, I'd like to be in Texas, Joni. I'd like to come there, or, you know, I'd love to be in Los Angeles. I mean, I would love to be in those places.
Well, if you do, let me know, because we'll have to get together.
I know, I'd love it. Yeah. France is that kind of country that it's such a popular destination for many, many people. Mm-hmm. And I think that gives it a cachet that a lot of other that makes it a very popular subject.
Yeah, well, it's so mythic. you know, to people who've been there and to people who have not been there.
It has a, I don't know what it is, it has a sort of a romance about it. I can't explain. I mean, I've been coming here obviously for so long now, and even before we moved, we used to come here quite a lot. Every time I arrive, I have this just great feeling inside. You know, I feel this kind of sense of expectation, anticipation, excitement, which it's not easy always to feel excited about being somewhere every time. You know, it's not something, we do get a bit too blasé. And so it does have that, there's something about it, that's for sure.
I always say that I think the French just have the most wonderful taste or sense of art or style than any other country. And, you know, and I mean, I see, like, in design and furniture, I'm just so partial to French, you know, over English or Spanish or whatever. But the buildings, I mean, the architecture, everything is just prettier in France.
It's very beautiful. And I think what you said, Joni, I think the French have a sense of style that, I mean, even today I was wandering around in the village just looking in the windows and seeing what's happening for Christmas and who's decorating and what's going on. And I just, the way they combine things, you know, I just, sometimes I just don't think of it, but when you look at it, it's brilliant. It's just a sort of a different way of looking at the world. I think that maybe that's how they are. So it, which gives them that talent for stylish living.
It's definitely more an innate thing. It's the lifestyle. You know, I think it's who they are based on their experiences living in that.
They really are very, they focus their lives on their lifestyle, if you want. I mean, a lot of, you know, you've only got to think about, I was wandering around today and all the shops are closing, you know, 12:30, getting ready to go for lunch. I mean, it's not quite mid-December, but it's, you know, Christmas trading.
You know, but I mean, even when you think about, like, the farm buildings, the farm buildings are, you know, which are just total dumps in most countries, you know, on the countryside. But yeah, in France, they're just beautiful. You know, why is that? I mean, maybe it's the stone, the limestone, or the tiled roofs. I don't know what it's a combination, but I mean,
but they're also hand, because they're so old, they're hand done, and I think they're so.
But Megan, say you go to Russia and it's all hand done, is not beautiful like that, you know? I mean, just any other country.
Well, the land,
the provincialness, you know, I think there's literally a, you know, the provincial feel that you get, sort of the handcrafted feel, I think is so, so charming.
Yeah, it's because, you know, I'm looking out the window now as I speak to you, and the majority of our house, the living room and upstairs the bedrooms, was an old barn. And when we bought it, it was pretty well coming apart. But I remember just watching the builders, and what they did was they first of all, they took the roof off tile by tile, and they're just very simple terracotta tiles laid on in a sort of pattern overlay with no cement or whatever one, you know, puts together to hold on the roof tiles, but it's just a very simple layering effect. They took that off one by one and they marked it so that they could replace it afterwards. And the same with the stone walls. They took out the stones where they felt that they were precarious or they needed restoration, and they marked them, and then they put them back, and they had a huge pile of stone nearby. And this one guy, he was called Fazel, he would go over, he would pick a stone that he thought was about the right size for the hole in the wall. He would sort of chip it with his little tool, and he'd put it in, squish it around, you know, kind of turn it around and see it would fit, and then that was it. And literally built the wall, rebuilt the walls by hand. So I think you're right when you say that makes a different, you know, it does give it a very beautiful feel.
One of the things that I don't know what, you know, I think this maybe plays into sort of the romance of France, is just how different and varied it is. I mean, I've been several times and done a driving tour all around the country, and yet I feel like I've seen, you know, a teeny tiny little fraction of Paris, and of although I've been to Paris more than I've been to any American city, except Boston, which I lived in, you know, but yet I feel like I don't know it at all.
No, I think, well, Provence is very different from Bordeaux, which is again different from the Alpes-Maritimes, which is, they're all very different regions, and they have their own particular architectural style. I suppose Provence is one of the most famous regions, and I guess that's why we're all familiar with the style of architecture. But it's very different. The south is very different to the north. That's true.
And I do recall just I drove on the driving tour I did with a friend. We drove up to Normandy and then down to Nantes and then Bordeaux and then Lourdes, and then all the way from Lourdes back up to Versailles. And yeah, that was one long drive.
Yeah.
And you know,
it's a lot of mileage.
It was a lot of mileage. And you know, but it was fabulous because it really was the countryside and the vineyards and the little houses and the little tiny towns and you know, just really seeing, as Joni, as you said, you know, all these outbuildings and stuff, and they just seemed so charming on their own. And they weren't fancy by any stretch, but I mean, even Lourdes, which was really, you know, tourist, like Atlantic City almost.
Yeah.
You know, still it had its moments.
No, it's a beautiful, I think the French, they're very nationalistic people, and I don't know how they travel a bit, but they certainly, for example, don't travel as much as Australians, and they're very, very proud people. But when I drive around the country, I think, well, you know what, I get it. Like, if you want to ski, they have the most beautiful skiing. If you want to swim, they have everything going with the water. If you want to be a mountain climber, you know, hiker, that's all there. Or if you just want to hang around and be an urbanite, well, Paris, where better? So I can understand why when they travel, they tend to stay within their own country, because they do have it all here.
You know, going to your blog, you have a beautiful blog. But it always makes me sad because I want to see more and more and more of your house. And
well, you know, my new book, French Essence, that has a lot of the house.
Yeah, it does. But the house is it's just so beautiful. And I just could look. I'm sitting here pulling every picture of your house off your blog to save it. Cause...
Well, you know, I mean, I'm a bit of a, what's the word? You know, I love interiors. I mean, I just live for reading all those magazines and looking at pictures, and I'm forever changing things around. I mean, even yesterday I was changing all the furniture around again for Christmas, and sometimes I drive myself crazy doing that, but you know, I love doing it. So making that book with Carla, French Essence, where, you know, essentially it's a lot of vignettes and furniture, you know, we made a lot of different, I created a lot of different settings to photograph for that book. I mean, it was just brilliant. I mean, I love doing it, and I mean, I could do it every day. But it's a beautiful setting here, so it's not difficult to make it look good. That's the truth.
I'm sorry. In February, 2009, you were writing about, you were thinking about maybe quitting your blog, and
oh, I don't know. Did I? I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, you said, I won't stop blogging, nor do I want any more of my blogster pals to stop either. So when you feel the pressure, breathe deeply, relax, and worry not if a post isn't covered. It's funny, I think we've all gone through that stage where...
Oh, God, yes.
I think that post was a reaction to, there was a couple of Australian girls at the time who quit their blogs. And I think that was a reaction. I wasn't actually saying I was quitting, but I was just saying that I don't really think we should ever feel too much pressure from blogging. And, I mean, it's very easy to feel, oh, my gosh, I haven't commented enough. Oh, my gosh, I need to get a blog post up. Oh, I've got to be cleverer. My photos need to be prettier. But actually, I just don't think we should do that. I think our blogs are a reflection of who we are. And I think they must swing and change with our moods and our... what's going on in our lives, and that's actually what makes them personal and individual. That's what I was trying to say, I guess, is that...
I see that you were...
Sorry?
It was around the time where Absolutely Beautiful Things had stopped and Villa Anna had stopped, but, you know, ABT is back. She kind of tends to go on and off a little bit.
Well, funnily enough, she... Anna was probably the reason I started blogging, because... when My French Life came out, she really picked it up and she loved it and she promoted it. And I think that that's what all her American readers found out about My French Life. And until I became aware of her blog, I didn't really know much about it at all. So I always thank her for that, because I love blogging now, and I can't imagine not having French Essence. So, you know, it's a funny thing how these connections appear.
When did you start?
It was about 2 years ago now. It was just when I was writing French Essence.
I heard about your book from, in fact, I ordered it after reading about it on ABT, and I ordered it from Australia, I believe. You couldn't get it in America for a while.
No, I think what happens is, because my publishers are Australian, it takes kind of a year before the book then filters through, or it gets picked up by the American, the American rights get bought, and then it can be published in the States. It's a very kind of long, convoluted process, publishing.
There's a picture of, it's funny because I've been sort of gathering shots of different animal print carpets. Uh-huh. And you've got a staircase that has, I guess it's paper. What is that?
Is that everywhere? It's from,
yeah.
Yeah.
What is that hand paint? It's not hand painted. It's a paper,
was,
right?
I was in Australia last Christmas, I think, if this is the one. Is it the leopard print going up the photograph?
Yes.
I was in Melbourne, actually, and I'd taken my daughter, and I'd gone with another girlfriend of mine and her daughter, and we just went and had a night in Melbourne as a kind of Christmas treat. Anyway, we walked into this shop, and they had this fabulous leopard staircase, and I said, oh, please, may I take a photograph? So that's where it came from, and I think they'd just been clever. They'd literally stuck some kind of, they'd either painted it, you know, faux painted it, I think it was. But it wasn't, it definitely wasn't carpet.
No, I think it might be paper. I can't imagine that someone would paint that.
Sure,
why not?
It's
a lot of work.
Yeah, I think it's painted.
You do?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a difficult thing to do, but it's just a lot of work. It almost, but look at, when you look at it, there's like the fourth step up where the light's hitting it. It almost looks like it's paper. And I thought, Vicky, you had something to do with that. I was going to ask you how you did it.
Yeah, no, so it was just a fun moment where it was a great little shop, and I just thought, oh, that's a great idea, and I clicked it and decided to pop it up on the blog, which is a lot of what I do on the blog. It's just I see something, I like it, I snap it off, and then I think, oh, well, I'll just pop that up and write a few words about it, which is that's the thing I love about blogging, actually. It's a kind of a barometer of your comings and goings and your thoughts on any given day. Well, in my case, I don't plan it out very well.
You take beautiful pictures.
Oh, thank you.
I always really enjoy your photography.
Oh, well, it's point and click. I'm afraid I'm no technical expert, but I love doing it. You know, I just love roaming around, finding things. I was doing that today, actually, just sort of seeing what I could do. And in fact, after I speak to you girls, I'm going to go into town and take the Christmas lights, because they're really adorable this year.
Your front door. I'm sorry. Your front door. You have those iceberg roses?
Oh, they're my true love, I think.
Oh, that's May 23rd, 2009. So we can snap the picture of it. But, oh my God. That looks like it could be in a magazine. It's just gorgeous.
The roses, for some reason, the roses here, they really, they just must love the soil and then the conditions, because it's only just now that I've cut the icebergs back. I mean, we had rain this week, so unfortunately they've gone. But, you know, it's pretty amazing if you think they come from kind of May and they last until late November.
Wow, really?
Yeah. I don't know. I've had about three. I think I've had three different blooms from the iceberg. You know, three different cuttings from the iceberg. So they've been incredible this year.
Well, it's much more temperate there, isn't it?
It's kind of extreme, actually. It's very hot and dry in the summer, and then the winter it gets pretty cold. You know, freezing zero and. Not off and under, but I suppose it can be pretty cold. And sometimes snow, not a lot, every year, maybe for just a week or so. But, you know, I suppose, yeah, it's not a harsh climate, but they
seem. And you have lavender too.
Yes, that comes in July, blooms in July.
How long is the lavender bloom? Is it really fairly short, or does it stay up for...
What happens is it comes out at the beginning of July, and then it comes out and it's an absolutely iridescent purple. And then over the next 3 weeks, it sort of fades until it finally... I suppose it's a very sort of soft pale grey. And after that, usually in August, we cut it back. And I keep it because I burn it in winter on the fire because it gives a gorgeous scent to the
room. Oh, wow.
You know, I've got lavender, French lavender going across the front of my gate. I don't have a fireplace to burn it, but it doesn't keep blooming, but the blooms stay put and they still smell great now, even today. December.
Wow.
Yeah.
This one here, I don't know, maybe it's just the French way, but they cut it back and
maybe I should, because mine are getting kind of rangy.
Why don't you tell us about your crop that you grow?
Oh, the olives. Yeah. Well, it's just, it's now the end of the olive season. We've just finished harvesting about a week ago, and we had a really great year. Just to fill you in, we planted the olives after we bought the property. As soon as we bought the property, we cleared a lot of the fields and we planted olives, and we have about 3,000 trees.
Wow.
And so it's a beautiful grove now. I mean, they've grown, they're quite impressive, you know, they're quite tall, and so they've grown and they're bearing fruit. They have done for the last few years actually, but this year was a great result. And it's a wonderful time of the year. I don't know. It's a sort of, it's almost like a pause. It's the sort of the moment after summer, and it's the time before Christmas and the holidays begin. So it's a rather nice time. It's as if life stops for that month, and all you think about is being outside amongst nature and doing. It's a repetitive job, but it's also a wonderful job. So I love the harvest.
Wait, do you actually do the harvesting yourself?
Yes.
Not on my own. But I do it. I do.
But you pick the olives.
Yeah, I do, yes. I do it with we have a team of guys mostly who come and pick. And then I kind of go along with the manager and do my own little hand picking with them, because I like the whole ambience of the moment. And it's a sort of a lot of effort goes into growing them, a lot of time and a lot of thought. And so to actually be there when you take them off the trees, it just seems like the right thing. I like it. I love it, actually.
And so how long does it take for you to pick all those olives off of 3,000 trees? It just seems incredible.
This year it took 3 weeks. Yeah.
Oh.
And we were a team of six or so. I was away for a bit of it this year, so I was heartbroken, actually. Because
and then what? And then where do they go?
Oh, so every day they get taken to a mill, which is about 15 minutes away, and I sell the fruit to this mill, and then he presses the oil, and then he sells the oil. So, and I keep enough for my own consumption and friends and that sort of thing, but basically I wholesale the fruit.
Is it a money make? I mean, do you make a lot of money on that, or is it?
No. No, it's a passion. Let's put it that way. I'm afraid it's not a great money spinner, but it all helps. It helps, but it's. I'd like it to be more profitable, but I just don't know. The problem is that the costs are high, and recently I've registered to become organic, and I have... with the European Union, and so I think that's a really great thing to do. But you know, all these things cost money, cost time, changes things different. You can't use a lot of products, so your output lessens, which, you know, I think is a good thing. I'm happy to be that way. We'll see. I mean, maybe it will become profitable. I don't know. I can't see it for the moment, but...
You consider all the hours put in. I mean, the hours are money, you know, and it just seems like that would take so much, the manual labor in itself.
Well, it's virtually one full-time employee to manage the fields, to treat them when they need it, prune them. I mean, not counting the harvest. So it's actually a very labor-intensive occupation.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a wonderful thing to grow fruit. I can't explain it. It just gives you a real simpatico with nature. And I think in this day and age where, you know, especially me, I'm, you know, permanently on the internet and, you know, in between big cities and country, it's just a very wonderful opportunity to be able to be, to work on the land like that.
I don't know why. You know, if you had asked me 10 years ago and said, oh, what would you think about living in the French countryside and picking olives and hanging out for 8 hours a day with a group of old fellows who don't speak any English, I said, are you insane? Like, this is not the girl, this is not me. You know, this is the girl who loves the big city, who wants to wear her high heels, who wants to go out at night and enjoy, you know, all that a big city offers. This is not me. But things change. I've changed. And this is my life, and I love it like that. I have to say, I it's what I would do a million times over.
How big is the town?
It has a population of around 9,000 permanent people, so pretty small. And then it swells in the summertime with visitors who come and holiday or who have secondary homes here. It probably doubles in size during the summer.
So big enough.
And then Christmas week, it gets busy again. You know, the week before Christmas leading, and then after to New Year, it gets very popular again.
Mm-hmm. But big enough to have the cute shops and all of the...
Well, the beauty of St. Remy is that it has the international infrastructure that I think we need. For example, you know, the internet. I mean, even though my connection is slow here, you know, you still have it. You can get the international newspapers. There are all the facilities that we need and we've become accustomed to. And we also have a fast train from Avignon, which means you can be in Paris in 2.5 hours, and the Marseille airport is very close, so I can be back in London in 4.5 hours from door to door, which is pretty good if I need to get there quickly.
And do you have a home in London?
We have a flat, yeah. Just a flat in central London, which the children, my son's at university, so he's only there periodically. But at the moment, the girls live there. So they're back. They've been travelling for the last few years, sort of in and out of different things. But at the moment, they're both working in London. So it's kind of nice. They're both there together.
So do you have any other books any books coming up in the works, in the thought process?
Well, I think it's a good question. I feel like French Essence has just sort of, I wouldn't say I put it to bed, but with it coming out in the US, it's quite, it's a great feeling that it's out, and I sort of feel, how can I say, I'm breathing a sigh of relief that now that's, it's available and that's happened. And I like to think maybe next year I'm starting to write another book. I'm sort of trying to, I'm kind of enjoying this year. I'm enjoying French Essence. I'm just wanting to relax a little bit, and then next year rethink about it.
Do you do book tours?
No, I don't. I don't think I'm nearly well known enough for that. But also, I think these days publishing is a little different, and book selling is a lot to do with internet sales. And also, especially in America, it's a lot to do with bloggers and getting your book out on different blogs and creating awareness that way. And I think they feel that that's a much better use of their time, or to have it written up in magazines and things like that. So, I mean, I think unless you're J.K. Rowling or Stephanie Myers, you know, I'm probably not going to be invited on a book tour. Sadly, I'd love to come.
I don't know. I think it would be a great idea. I mean, because you're well-known in the blog world, I think that you'd probably get a lot of promotion through the blogs. And
it would be, I would love it. Like, it would be fun, because one thing I have really enjoyed about blogging is getting to know my readers. And that was one of the reasons that I started the blog, was that when you write a book and you share so much of yourself, it really is a labor of love, actually. And so to get to know the people who are enjoying your work, it's like just the best thing in the world. So I would love to meet them. You know, I'd love to meet more of my readers. But blogging has been brilliant from that point of view, because I'm able to communicate with them, and they write to me and I write to them, and you know, you end up making friendship, which is great.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you have a very natural quality. You know, your blog posts, there's a comfortableness that's, you know, it's always, as you said, you know, you just snap a picture and it's a little something pretty and a little bit of a comment, and there's just sort of a comfort level that makes people gravitate towards you.
Vicky, you have a post on your blog, it's called Thinking of Paris and the Flea Market, and you have a French bedroom with a French bed and a little French chair next to it, mm-hmm. with a white wood floor. It looks like, or a white stone floor. Is that your house?
Yes, it is. I think Emily's. Is it Emily's bedroom? I haven't got my blog up. Is it Emily's bedroom?
Yeah, it's like with a short little gold silk bedspread.
Yes, that's it.
Oh my God, that is gorgeous.
Where is that? What date?
February 5th, 2010.
I think that's a shot, actually, I think, if I remember, from French Essence, the book. But it was a lovely story, because when, in 1995, I came away for 6 months, actually, with the children and my husband, and we spent a lot of time in France. And anyway, he was on a business trip away somewhere, that's why I always call him Mr. Frequent Flyer, because he's always somewhere or other. And so I took the children to Paris, and we had this, they were young, you know, so we had this deal that one day I'd do what they'd do, and the next day they'd have to come and do what I wanted, because there was no way that they would go and let me rifle through all the sort of flea markets and look in the antiques if I didn't kind of give in to them. So I think I ended up having to go on, you know, some sort of hideous ride at Euro Disney, and then they had to come to the Clignancourt, the flea markets, with me. Anyway, the four of us went, and we found Emily's bed, and that's the picture that you put in.
Uh-huh.
And but it is lovely. But I always look at it and remember that day, and that's what I think the wonderful thing about antiquing is that when you look around a room and you see something, you remember a day, and that's part of creating a home, I think, is that the memories that come from finding particular things that you love. I'm getting into that mode. I'm going to start decorating shortly, so that will be, I always find once I start get the baubles out, then I feel Christmassy. I don't know about you, but that's how it is for me. Once I sort of get all the things together, then I think, yeah, that's it. I'm in holiday mode.
Well, I saw on your blog that you had selected your colors for the year.
Yeah, it's a big change for me, because I've always, I don't know, down here I've always done a lot of red. Because the house is very neutral, if you want, because it has stone floors or very pale terracotta floors, and the walls are plaster, but in a very, you know, it's a neutral, taupey kind of colour. I've always thought that the red looks very festive and feels really Christmassy. But this year, I don't know why, I just decided, no, I'm going to do the whole silver, white, and, you know, the green of the tree thing. So we'll see. I hope it looks good.
Sounds beautiful.
Yeah, it does sound beautiful. I've been
I'm just getting everything together, and what we do is we put the olives up the stairs, and then I cut the oak trees, and I'm going to spray them sort of mottledy silver to put on the mantelpieces. So I mean, I hope it looks good. I'm just sort of, until I get into it, I won't be able to decide whether it's working or not. But anyway, I'll let you know. I'll show you.
We'll post it on your blog. We'll be watching.
Once I get going, I will. Okay, well, have a great day, girls.
Thanks, Vicky.
Right. Thanks.
Bye.
This has been the Skirted Roundtable with Megan Arquette from Beach Bungalow 8, Joni Webb from Cote de Texas, and I'm Linda Merrill from Surroundings. And this week we are joined by blogger and author Vicky Archer. Thank you so much for joining us. You can visit us online at www.skirtedroundtable.blogspot.com or download our podcast from iTunes, search for the Skirted Roundtable. Thanks so much, and we'll be back soon.